So in India, the constitution has been established in 1950, you know, assigning equal rights and dignity to each and every member of the society. But yet we see even today, even after 70 years after independence in India, still the traditional jobs for Dalits, as in like most the toilet cleaners and manual scavenging people and people who are working clean after the body in post-mortem settings, you know, they are also Dalits. So we see that how even 70 years after independence, the jobs which Dalit people are doing are linked with their traditional jobs as assigned to them by the Brahminical system. And because of which we see many of the atrocities against Dalits. So as per National Crime Records Bureau, 43,203 crimes against Dalits were reported in 2017. And we know that many of the cases are actually, you know, not reported. So this is the situation. And now we have to see that why this system of caste is so strong and functions always in this way in all aspects of our life. Socio-economic, cultural, even political. So that is what we have learned from the scholarship of Dr. Ambedkar, which he discussed in Caste in India, Brahmanical Patriarchy. So this is the key concept to understand how caste is linked with gender. So patriarchy in South Asia is Brahmanical. Why? Because originally patriarchy, that is controlling woman's sexuality, was the base to maintain the caste hierarchy. And that is why women come to be the oppressed and degraded people in our communities, in our part of the world. So there were three rituals and means to control woman's sexuality in order to maintain the numeric balance of each community, caste community. You know, if somebody from Brahmin community, husband, like, you know, a husband passes away, so then a woman would be his wife, or a person who is her, the person who married to her will become an extra person in that particular community. And then that extra person might go to another community person to marry, and that is why they have invented sati. So sati, where a woman has to be burnt after the husband is deceased. And sati had been so prevalent in India that even last case has been reported in 2015, and there was a suspected case in 2017 also. So, and still there are so many temples like Sati Anusuya and Sati other temples where people revere this kind of tradition. And this the woman who had been Sati earlier, they are being worshipped even today. So that is the status of Sati now. And enforced widowhood was another mechanism to maintain the caste balance, because sati was very difficult, because not every woman would be willing to die, or not every woman can be forced to die. And also, as people started communicating with other communities, they also tried to learn that the value of their life. So they would not just go and die for their husband. They would also want to, you know, live for some other reasons. So widowhood, enforced widowhood was a ritual where the woman who's widowed had to shave her hair or live in such a way, like we are only white and not being participant in any kind of festivals or marriages or such functions, because they are regarded as impure. And also they have been forced to live in such a manner that no man can find them attractive. So there would be no chance left for them to remarry to another person out of their caste. So these two rituals were invented to resolve the problem when the husband dies. But what about the situation when the woman dies? So for the situation when woman dies, the man is an extra person who can look forward to marry somebody from out of the caste. That is why child marriage has been invented. In the child marriage, so child marriage, because the woman who's of lower age will have like will have different So child marriage was invented because the woman has to be from the same caste, so age has been compromised, and that is why child marriage. So in order to maintain that balance. So, and this practice of sati and widowhood initially was actually reserved for Brahmin and Kshatriya woman. But lately, with the imitation of the Brahmanical understanding and Brahmanical worldview in the other communities, this had extended to other communities as well, historically. Can we please move to the next slide? Yeah, so we see that patriarchy is gender inequality, but as I mentioned in the beginning, in South Asia, it is not just gender, but also caste interlinked. We can see this from the example of honor killing, that when somebody is, when a couple is being murdered by local authorities or parents or other guardians, in the case of honor killing, they are killed not only because of choosing their partners by their own, but also because they choose their partner defying the caste norms. Like most of the cases of honor killing are about inter-caste marriage. So we can see that this is not only a gender problem, but also a caste problem. And then survey reports exhibit a dominant linkage between the caste-determined professions and violence against women involved in them. As we have seen in National Federation of Dalit Women, National Campaign for Dalit Human Rights, Sharmila Rege's works. And we can also see it from these lines from Swarupa Rani. When has my life been truly mine? In the home, male arrogance sets my cheek stinging, while in the street, caste arrogance splits the other cheek open. So this is true about almost every Dalit woman, that when she goes out of the, her house, then she has to face caste arrogance, caste-based violence and discrimination or exploitation. And in the home, patriarchy, like from within her own community and also with other community men. So the second two lines register the phenomena of patriarchy manifest as violence, and the next lines signify caste arrogance, that is called Brahminism. So it is too deeply rooted that it sort of controls the life of a Dalit woman, which we can see in the next slide. Yeah, so caste and sex work. So there is a major debate about sex work between the mainstream Indian feminists and Dalit feminists. So the mainstream Indian feminists argue that sex work is also like another profession which is chosen by the women who are involved in it. While Dalit feminists say that actually the socio-economic conditions put Dalit women into that situation where they have no other option than going into sex work. So this is a historical fact which was there, which is ignored in the mainstream articulation of feminism, that Devdasi, Jogatini and Murali like practices were there in India. And even lately after independence in 2010s, there was a case about Devadasi, which had been actually banned much earlier by the British government in India, but still people revere this, and it was practiced till late 2010s. And what is there in this practice is young women, girls from Dalit communities were sent to the temples as told by the priest that they are the chosen ones to their family and guardians. And that is how nobody opposed. They thought that this will help them getting spiritual, revelation or more connection to the God. So that is why they send their young daughters to the temples. And they used to clean after the temple, take care of everything, and used to cook for the priest and those kind of work they were doing, maintaining the temple work. And also they had been sexually exploited by the priest. So as we can see in the other image, which is a sketch made by artist, Ambedkarite artist called Savi Savarkar, which is also on my book, this cover. So these women who are put into this system, which is very inhuman for them, they don't find a way to get over of this kind of lifestyle, and that's why they end up into prostitution, because those women are not accepted by the society because they had already been sexually exploited. So they end up getting into prostitution. And this cover, the diagram, the sketch shown by Savi Savarkar, represents that how a Dalit woman's life is sort of controlled by the Brahmanical system, where she has been aborted many times, and that is why those stretch marks on her stomach, and also looking very sad, and crow as a sign of sadness and bad luck. It represents that how a Dalit woman's life is completely determined and controlled by the Brahmanical system through these practices of Devadasi, Joktini, Murli. And this is a historical fact which we need to consider when we are debating about or arguing about sex work. So this word called sex work is actually also not, in this case, is not like a work, because nobody would actually go for sex work when they get a profession where they can also avail money as well as dignity. So because they don't get money and also no dignity in other kinds of job which they do as household workers or laborers or vendors, that is why they go for sex work in order to fulfill their economic needs, financial needs for their house. So this aspect is completely missed out by the mainstream articulation, which Dalit feminists consider. Can we please go to the next one? And because Brahmanical patriarchy has been so, interlinked with caste and gender and class and other issues, that is why what we need is an intersectional perspective in theorizing gender. So intersectionality has been introduced, invented by Kimberly Crenshaw, Black feminist. She's also a contributor to this reader, Dalit Feminist Theory. So this is an a critical framework which analyzes the multiple aspects of minority identities. So as we can see that the experience of men is different than those of women. Similarly, the experience of women is different than those of Dalit women. So in the intersectionality, what happens is we don't only focus on single axis framework, that is of gender, which is the main lacuna in mainstream articulation of Indian feminism. They say that mainstream feminists, who are mostly caste and class privileged women, they argue that at one point of time, a person is either a Dalit or a woman. But in cases like honor killing and in cases like, you know, sexual atrocity against Dalit woman, in cases like Bhavari Devi is a very important case in Indian judicial system, which was a gang rape case in 1992, where the Dalit woman had been gang raped by five men of the same family. Like, those men were upper caste men, so called upper caste, and they had raped her in order to put her down because she was campaigning against child marriage in that region. So had she been a man, she might not have been raped. Or has she been a Savarna woman, she might not have been, you know, regarded as very accessible or an easy target for the Savarna men. Or even the idea of respect for Dalit women are not regarded respected in the society. And that is the aspect which we need to consider. And only intersectionality can help us see a problem or a case through, considering overall aspects of it, all elements involved. So as Kimberly Crenshaw writes, if we aren't intersectional, some of us, the most vulnerable, are going to fall through the cracks. So that's what is the problem with the mainstream Indian theorizing. Yeah, so these are basically few of the problems which I have discussed in the introduction of this book, that is Indian Feminism versus Dalit Woman. So there have been claims that contemporary theory of gender is not possible because the category woman cannot be homogenized in Indian context. So the category of woman cannot be homogenized because women are not only woman, they are also Dalit, they are also Muslim, they are also rural woman, they are also poor woman, they are also women who are involved in sex work, so-called sex work, which is also called by some of my friends as religious prostitution, because religion gives them that kind of status where they end up into prostitution. So the women are not only women. So this standpoint offers a kind of pessimistic approach towards theorizing gender. So this is one of the problems that we need to theorize. Even when women cannot be homogenized, we need to theorize, and there is a way which is led by intersectional approach. Second problem is the problem of intersectionality. Like, the concept intersectionality is accepted by the mainstream Indian feminists in the broader context of their being located in the third world, as in, like, you know, in South Asia, which is different from the Europe and US, and also because of the race, that we are not whites or blacks or Latin, but we are South Asian people. So based on these two differences, they accept intersectionality, but at the same time, they reject intersectionality for the internal differences within the South Asian woman, that is of caste. So it has been decolonized at international level, but it has to be decolonized at national level, like as I see it in Indian feminism. So this is another problem which is very ironic. And then other problem is, since the caste privileged feminists have been at the forefront to debate and represent all women's issues in India, there have been widespread inclination towards taking the feminist thesis as their premise and abandon women's relation to caste. As we discussed it a while ago, that women's problem is a sole problem in isolation with women's relation with caste or other issues. Yeah, so while patriarchy in India is Brahmanical, Indian feminism is particularistic. As I mentioned in the beginning, like, if patriarchy had been a problem which stood in isolation from other socio-economic and cultural inequities, the mainstream Indian feminist theorizing would have been sufficient. But as in no society, our society also, in our society as well, in the patriarchy is deeply linked with caste, as it is linked with race and color in the so-called Western world. So that is how the mainstream theorizing leaves the caste issue as the sole burden of Dalit woman. So they claim to speak for everybody, but at the same time, they don't put efforts to recognize the role of caste into a gender-based exploitation with women. Sharmila Rege had mentioned, she argues that no politics committed to caste-based society can overlook sexual politics. It is therefore important to revision it rather than give it up or pose the upper caste woman alone as the only needy constituents of such a politics. So this is a critique of feminism in Indian context, that women who are caste class privileged, they argue in such a way that the problem of patriarchy could be resolved only for them, but not for those women who are at a lower status in the same community. So that is one criticism. But being feminist, it is our responsibility to argue and work and articulate or theorize in such a way that we can, you know, help to deliver justice to each and every woman and non-men of the society, not only the women who are already caste or class privileged. That is why we use intersectional perspective to establish this concept called Dalit difference. Difference has been theorized by Patricia Hill Collins and the Black feminist philosopher using intersectional approach, which was invented by Kimberly Crenshaw. I am using their scholarship to establish Dalit difference. So Dalit difference can be understood as the unique kind of discriminatory aspect which Dalit women face at the intersection of caste, class, gender deprivations. And when we use intersectional method, then we will also add other issues, like if the woman is from the rural area, or if the woman is also a disabled person, or other kind of, you know, inequities and other kind of deprivation. So that is why we need intersectional perspective in theorizing gender and maintaining Dalit difference at the core of feminist enterprise is crucial from feminism in India to resolve patriarchy, because patriarchy is Brahmanical. So Dalit feminism is a feminism which recognizes difference, this concept, difference that we are, Dalit woman is different from other woman, and that difference has to be recognized, acknowledged, and well articulated. So that difference is also not about addition of the burdens, like a Dalit woman suffers caste problem and the gender problem and the class problem, but we have to see it into at the intersectional point of her identity and her location in the society, that it is not only addition of different kind of, you know, deprivations, but at that point when a person is put at that juncture, then her experience of exploitation, her experience of vulnerability, and her position as a deprived, marginalized, exploited person will be different, which will be unique, which other people will not be able to see. So that is why the difference and Dalit difference. So Dalit feminism is a feminism which recognizes difference, appreciates intersectionality, is logically coherent and universal. That is for all. So Dalit feminist theory is an answer to Brahmanical patriarchy, bearing the epistemic wantage to consummate the feminist philosophy. We also need to remember that Dalit feminism is not a feminism of the Dalits or for the Dalits or by the Dalits. Dalit feminism is simply a standpoint where we keep the caste question at the center of our gender articulation or gender theorizing, because caste is at the center of gender-based exploitation in South Asian context, as we have learned from Dr. Ambedkar's analysis of graded inequality, Brahminical patriarchy and how caste is linked with gender. And that system is so deeply rooted that even if the practices like sati, widowhood and child marriage, well, child marriage is still practiced at many of the rural places, even in my own village. But even when these practices are not, you know, maintained now, still this system of degrading Dalit women, degrading Dalit people and degrading everybody who is under you in the hierarchical system. So that is why we need to consider the caste question at the center, and that would be a Dalit feminist perspective. That can be done by anybody. It doesn't have to be a Dalit person to theorize Dalit feminism, but because most of the non-Dalit people lack a kind of commitment because they are not the stakeholders. So, and also it is about giving up some kind of privileges. That is why we have to be really cautious about it. While Sharmila Rege was a Brahmin woman, but she had articulated Ambedkar feminism. So, but then I like, it is very difficult to find somebody like Sharmila Rege. So we also need Dalit lived experience in order to theorize Dalit feminism or feminism. Many of the confusions among people in my own university, JNU, is that Dalit feminism is an answer to Dalit patriarchy. Not at all. That is very misconstrued understanding. Dalit feminism is an answer to Brahminical patriarchy. Because patriarchy is Brahminical, that is why we need a Dalit feminist standpoint. Had patriarchy been in an isolation, which doesn't happen in any of the world, then mere feminism would have worked, which doesn't recognize other socioeconomic differences. So that's how Dalit difference is being conceived in the introduction of this book. And also I am looking forward to develop it in my research. Yeah, so towards a Dalit feminist theory. So this is one Dalit feminist theory. And through this work, I am hopeful that more people will come and contribute and establish Dalit feminist theory as a discipline. And also so many scholarship will be developed on this, because very less scholarship has been there on Dalit feminism. And like in the mainstream academia, it has been there, but it has also been ignored and suppressed. So with this work, I hope that many more works will come with more force and power, and a collective voice of Dalit women especially will be heard. So in this book, I would just want to mention that the contributors are like Uma Chakravarti, Kimberly Crenshaw, Vigita, Gopal Guru, Kanchana Mahadevan, Mary E. John, Nivedita Menon, Tejaswini Niranjana, Shailuja Pike, Smita M. Patil, Sharmila Rege, Vandana Sonalkar, Julie Stephens, Suzy Tharu, Meena Gopal, J.G. Lee, J.P. Mangu Bhai. These are the contributors. And the book has been divided, organized in 6 parts. So the 6 parts are like, as I have discussed, some of it I have already discussed in the previous slides, that the 6 parts are, first is Indian feminism versus Dalit feminism, where Nivedita Menon, Suzy Tharu, Tejaswini Niranjana, Gopal Guru, Uma Chakravarti, V. Geeta, they are like, their standpoints have been put together with the debate on intersectionality mostly. And then second part discusses predecessors of Dalit feminism, that how Phule Ambedkarite feminism gave Dalit women a different kind of a strong agency, which they didn't have earlier, and through which Dalit women continue to thrive in future. So the contributions are from Shailja Paik, Vandana Sonalkar, and Sharmila Rege. Then third part is about lived experience as difference. Lived experience as difference is Dalit lived experience. So there is a discussion about how the violence against women is Brahminical in nature, and how epics and aesthetics have been contributing to vilify Dalit women, like Shurpanakha and other kind of, you know, Kataka, Tataka, these kind of images of Dalit women have been put in the epics so that people can believe into the philosophical justification of Dalit woman's degradation. And then there is also Dalit woman's autobiographies. Then part four discusses what like the Dalit difference mostly. There is one difference through intersectionality by Kimberly Crenshaw, then Gopal Guru's work, and then Dalit difference. And then part fifth is on intersectionality in India, like why we need intersectionality in Indian context. And that can be used in South Asian context too, because our society is deeply organized and structured around caste. So this is about the Dalit woman question and why it is necessary. And part six of the book is about towards a Dalit feminist theory. Like, how do we theorize Dalit feminism? So Julie Stephens, Smita M. Patil, Kanchana Mahadevan contribute in this. So this is about what are other problems which are not, you know, recognized as yet in the mainstream Indian feminist articulations. And actually, I would want to mention that there is one thing found, some things found in mainstream Indian feminist articulations, which is very problematic. And that is othering of Dalit feminism. Like predecessors of Dalit feminism, there was Phule Ambedkar and Dalit Women's Agency. And also there had been work, autobiographies, and many of the other works also there has been there in many in Marathi language and in other South Indian languages. But they have been ignored and othered by calling them mere stories, narratives, native narrations and stories and poetry, works of literature, but not as scholarly or theoretical work. So these are the kinds of, you know, wordings being used by the mainstream feminists for the Dalit feminists. They also use words like feminism and other politics. So no, feminism does not include the caste question. That is very clear. But also, when somebody is speaking about the caste question, then it becomes an other politics. That kind of wordings have been used. And also, there are two modes of, addressing the Dalit woman's problem, which is mentioned in Sharmila Rege's work. That is feminist as tourist model, like where Savarna women go to the Dalit women's places and ask for their interviews and collect their data. And they just go as a tourist. They have this paternalistic, take on them that, okay, we know how is it to live life and we will help you get civilized. We will help you get justice. We will help you in that way, not being equal with them. And second of the issue is feminist as explorer model. That model is, okay, we go there and they are different and very exotic. So it is exotic the way they are living and all, but actually not really in the mainstream. So mainstream is already in their head, which is their own lives, but all else is at the periphery. So that is some of the way they are taking and considering or including Dalit feminism out of the feminism. So including, but with the othering kind of attitude. So that is one problem which is discussed in chapter 16. And then how can we revitalize Dalit feminism? Like earlier it has been there and in present context, and how can we, articulate and theorize in such a manner that we can hope to have a better articulation, better theory and better system for justice or policy. And then last chapter is about Dalit woman's experience toward a Dalit feminist theory. So this last chapter of this book actually establishes that Dalit woman's experience is a necessity in order to theorize Dalit feminist theory. Why? Because lived experience plays a vital role in any theorizing, and lived experience has been othered and suppressed by the mainstream academics. One reason might also be because they don't have that experience, but they know the value of it. That is why they collect data and take interviews So, but lived experience has to be theorized from a Dalit feminist perspective and not from the mainstream feminist perspective. That is what is there in the last chapter.